Chapter 9. I heard stories about his grandfather when I was a boy, and Jason Solo struck me as walking the same path. Vader liked a loyal military elite at his back, too, and sometimes ends do justify the means. The protest from the media and civil rights groups had greeted our announcement that a Galactic Alliance Guard had been formed to deal with the new threat to public safety— was to be expected. It did not, however, make it any easier to hear myself decried as the new Palpatine. Chief of State Omis, Memoirs. Corellian Quarter, Coruscant. Ben knew he was taking an insane risk by going back to the Corellian neighborhood, but he had to find Barrett. This time he made sure he was wearing regular clothes, not Jedi robes. He worried that he was a coward for hiding his status, but a sensible voice inside him said that there was no point in getting beaten up before he found out something useful. That was pragmatism, as Jason called it. Corellians didn't have a fight going with the Jedi, just the Alliance, but the distinction between the two wasn't always clear. He sauntered along the walkways, stopping to stare at things that made him curious, reminding himself that he was a 13-year-old boy and not a soldier this time. Nobody seemed to notice him. All he wanted to do was to look Barrett in the face and ask a simple question. What made him see Coruscanti as the enemy? The fact that two governments were behaving like idiots didn't seem like justification enough for Ben. He didn't want to attack Corellians just because the government had a problem with Corellia. Even the raid on Centerpoint Station hadn't been directed against people. He felt no hatred for Corellians at all. But Barrett, who wasn't that much older than him, had tried to shoot a CSF officer. He hadn't aimed at the mob stoning the Corellian embassy. He had tried to shoot a complete stranger who was trying to stop the riot. Ben didn't understand. And he needed to. The Corellian neighborhood was quieter today, as if people were waiting for something to happen. Some of the shops were closed. Ben stopped at a grocery store to pick up a bottle of Fizz-Aid and asked for directions to the Psi workshops. He drank as he walked the kilometer or so to Barrett's family business. Ben found two men who looked about his father's age, leaning over a large repulsor drive with hydrospanners in their hands. They glanced up sharply, but relaxed when they saw him. "Just a kid." "Where's Barrett?" he asked casually. One of the men stood up.
"Barrett? Barrett! Someone here to see you."
Barrett emerged from a storeroom, wiping his hands on a rag. He stared at Ben for a few moments as if he didn't recognize him, and then didn't look pleased to see him. He walked out into the open air, and Ben followed him a little way from the workshops. There was an appetizing smell of frying and spices coming from an open doorway.
"Did you find your missing diamonds?"
Ben asked. He meant the gems made out of Corellian's ashes in the sanctuary.
"Did anyone give them back?"
"No," said Barrett. "The sort of people who smash memorials don't have consciences."
It wasn't a good start. Ben plunged in.
"I saw you outside the embassy the other day."
"What were you doing there?"
"Getting a face full of gas."
"Yeah, so was I."
Ben wondered what Barrett had done with his blaster. He knew he could draw his lightsaber instantly from his pocket if he had to find out the hard way.
"When I say I saw you, I mean I saw you with a weapon."
"Everyone carries a piece, even you."
"I have to know." "But why shoot at a cop?"
"You going to turn me in?"
So he hadn't seen Ben deflect the blast. He had shot and run.
"I didn't think I hit anyone. They never said—"
"I just want to know why you did it."
"You aimed to kill, or you didn't care who you hit."
"The officer never did anything to you. He was just trying to stop a fight."
"Coruscant's against us. The Alliance is trying to kill us. We've got to defend ourselves."
"But that's not people. The CSF wasn't trying to do anything to you. How can you shoot at someone who wasn't aiming at you?"
You wouldn't understand.
I want to.
You wouldn't.
If you're that scared of us all, why are you still living here?
You'd like that, wouldn't you? Kick us out, send us back.
Ben didn't know how to respond.
You think you're at war with us?
We are. Maybe not properly, but we are.
How can you think that when you live here? If you really believe that, how can you even want to live here?
Ben stood staring at Barrett in complete incomprehension.
He had no idea what was going on in the Corellian's mind to make him feel that he was suddenly an alien on the planet where his family had been born. But he knew that it made him feel suspicious and wary of Barrett in a way that had nothing to do with the fact that he was prepared to draw a blaster.
"Come on, Barrett," one of the men yelled. "You going to be yakking there all day? Got jobs to do. Get on with it."
Barrett looked at Ben as if he was memorizing his face.
"Gotta go. Thanks for not turning me in."
He walked back toward the workshop. Ben wandered away, the half-full bottle of fizz-aid still clutched in his hand, and wondered if he should have reported Barrett to CSF. It had never crossed his mind. Jobby Town, Corellian Quarter, Coruscant, 0400 hours. This neighborhood hated the planet on which it found itself, and that was not a political or military assessment of the risk, but Jason Solo's certainty of what he detected in the Force. That alone was enough for a Jedi to act upon, if a Jedi was what he still was, he reminded himself. Jason could sense the resentment, anger, and danger that was simmering in this Corellian district of Galactic City, and that was why he had decided to begin his operations as the new commander of the Galactic Alliance Guard by raiding Jobby Town. It was hard to seal off a neighborhood in a place like Coruscant. The intersections were three-dimensional and required 6 CSF Traffic Division repulsor lift ships for each Skylane junction that Jason needed to have blocked off. He stood on the platform of a military assault vessel, a matte gray gunship, not unlike its CSF counterpart, watching 2 of the CSF ships hover into position. It was still dark. The CSF vessels had no navigation light showing. Jason could only see them, because the light pollution on Coruscant meant that Galactic City was never truly pitch black, and he could pick out the shape of the hull when it moved.
"Are you okay, Ben?"
Ben stepped forward. He hadn't said a word. He clutched his lightsaber hilt in one hand, and Jason sensed he was agitated rather than excited. He had changed irrevocably from a boy who found missions an adventure to a young man who had a healthy degree of fear in him.
"I'm fine, Jason."
"Comlink working?"
Ben fumbled with his right ear.
"Do I really have to wear it?"
"You need to be able to hear what's going on between squads. You can't do that using the Force."
Sometimes the non-Jedi solution to a problem was actually the easiest.
"I'm not even sure I can handle that much voice traffic yet."
Jason turned to the 5 squads of soldiers of 967 Commando in the troop bay. Elite shock troopers, whose specialty was siege-busting and personnel retrieval, all of them hand-picked because they were Coruscant-born and bred, and human, with no possibility of secret sympathies with other worlds. Among them were volunteers from the CSS anti-terrorist unit, selected and vouched for by Shevu. They would be loyal. Jason had come to value loyalty very highly lately. He couldn't see their faces behind their riot visors and sealed black helmets, but they exuded no more than a sense of concentration and a little apprehension of the level that was normal for troops going into battle. They didn't know exactly what lay behind the doors of the Corellian Quarter, but they knew they ran the risk of armed resistance and even explosives. On the other side of the Corellian district, Shevu stood by with more squads, ready to storm buildings to search, subdue, and arrest. At the ends of the walkways, more soldiers of 967 Commando slipped into position and trained rifles on doors, ready to stop anyone escaping.
The sniper troops had moved into positions on the rooftops around the block. Jason opened the comm link, looped over his ear.
"Squad commanders, no discharge of weapons unless you're fired upon first."
Shavu's voice cut in.
"Can I suggest we update that to 'unless we perceive a real and immediate threat, sir'? Takes account of grenades and other weapons?"
"I'm thinking like a pilot, like a Jedi, not like an infantry officer."
"Good idea, Captain. Revise that."
There was a faint murmur on the net, as if troops had silenced their links for a moment, and then opened them again. They'd exchanged comments. They might have said that their commander was an idiot for not establishing better rules of engagement from the start of the mission planning. But it felt more like approval that he could listen to advice. The Force might not have been useful for communicating routine detail, but it was perfect for discerning mood. Jason felt it was time to roll. Most would be asleep. 0400 was a good time to disorient humans and minimize resistance. Shavu had shown him medical data to confirm this, but pointed out that it never, ever worked on Wookiees.
"Stand by," said Jason.
Ben's lightsaber sprang into life, the blue light illuminating the troop bay. The 967 sergeant crackled audibly as his armor systems created feedback in the assault vessel's public address system. He adjusted something on the side of his helmet. Silence descended. Around 2,000 people lived in this block of buildings, and Jason had 500 troops deployed. Not a good ratio, but it was enough to get the job done. The assault ship hovered level with the walkway, and he leapt down from the bay, followed by the 967, who spread immediately to stack either side of doorways. Above them, Jason could feel the adrenaline-fueled presence of roof teams and snipers. There was a second of profound stillness, like the pause of a pendulum before it swung back again.
"Go, go, go!" said Jason.
The assault troops swung into the sky lanes on either side of the block, and their arrays of 200 million lumen spot lamps turned the area into instant, blinding daylight. The 967 sergeant behind him relayed his voice via the assault ship.
"This is Coruscant National Security. Stay where you are. I repeat, stay where you are."
Jason felt the vibration in his teeth and sinuses. The canyon of walls on either side concentrated the sound.
"Officers will be entering buildings. Please cooperate. Be ready to show your identity passes."
One or two doors had already opened, and some people stood on balconies in bathrobes, hands shielding their eyes against the ferocious white spot lamps. All along the walkways there was a chaos of yelled commands and hammering on doors. There was no open area to assemble detainees to sort the Corellians from other passport holders who happened to be on the block. So commandos were going into the buildings and assessing the occupants where they stood, or taking them outside to stand against walls while their homes were swept for what had now simply become loosely termed as threats. People, devices, bad attitudes. They were all threats. Jason and Ben ran along the main walkway, lightsabers drawn, looking for where they might be needed. Around them, residents were already being led out of their homes, some silent and shocked, some swearing and struggling. Jason glanced back at Ben. His face was set in fixed concentration, wide-eyed, and made more shockingly white by the intense light. When he looked around, he could also see activity on the other side of the sky lane, where residents from the next block were starting to gather to watch the drama.
"This will be on HNE in minutes. Everyone's got a hall recorder these days. Never mind. I have nothing to hide.
Galactic Guard, outside, now!"
Ahead of them, a squad of 4 967 troops confronted a set of locked doors. They leapt back from the doorway, flattening themselves at either side of the entrance. Jason went to their aid.
"Ordnance, sir," said one of them.
The voice was female. She held up the sensor readout, the nose, as they called it, attached to the back of her left gauntlet. It winked red and orange. The nose sniffed something, and the occupants aren't cooperating. Stand clear.
Three inside.
On the other side of the doorway, a commando with sergeant's insignia and the name Wirrett, stenciled on his breastplate, held a thermal imaging scanner against the wall. His comrade stood back a few paces and snapped a gas grenade onto the muzzle of his rifle.
"If anything in there blows, sir, this isn't going to look pretty on HNE. You stand clear."
"Sergeant, I won't ask anyone to do what I won't do myself," said Jason. "Show me the image."
The sergeant, Wirrett, turned the imager to face Jason. It had a pistol grip like a loudhailer. One end of the body a lens, and the other side a display that showed red on black. Three human shapes moving around in an area that was probably set one room back from the frontage, judging by the range shown on the display's grid.
"Ben, do you sense anything?" Jason asked. "What does it feel like to you?"
Ben's sense of danger was becoming very acute. This was a good time to hone it to perfection. He half-closed his eyes in concentration.
"Dangerous, but not right now. Soon."
"Explosives, but not assembled? Is that what you feel?"
"Yes," said Jason.
He motioned Wirrett back.
"Hold the gas, trooper. You want them immobilized?"
"That's a general idea, sir, so they don't detonate anything."
"Fine."
Jason took a breath, visualized the interior of the ground floor and the door, and focused himself on the three people inside.
"Sir?"
Jason didn't hear the rest. He sent a force jolt through all three targets simultaneously, paralyzing them. And a second later, the doors blew open, not with the punishing shock wave of a conventional blast, but the contained violence of the force. The squad of commandos threw themselves flat. It was the smart thing to do in an explosion, clearly ingrained by hard training. They froze, waiting for a shock wave that never came. Wirrett got to his knees, and even if Jason couldn't see his face, he knew the man was grinning.
"Nice trick, sir,"
he said, and stood up, rifle ready, to ease through the torn gap that had been the front doors. Jason slipped in after him, followed by Ben and the rest of the squad. The three occupants of the house, a man in his 30s and two younger women, were crumpled on the floor of a back room, unconscious. Wirrett crouched down and checked them for a pulse.
"Are they going to be okay?"
"It's harmless and temporary," said Jason, "just a shock to the spinal cord."
"You're going to put us out of business, sir,"
said the female trooper.
"REBJ. "I wish that were true, but I suspect you're going to be busier than ever."
Jason watched as one of the squad held out his left gauntlet, following some trace. He was searching for the explosives.
"REBJ?
"Rapid entry by Jedi, sir. Very handy. You'll be in demand."
The three detainees were brought out on makeshift stretchers. Around them on the walkway, half-dressed civilians and black-armored troopers milled about trying to load onto more assault ships that were settling down or hovering level with the pedestrian access.
"Just turned back an HNE speeder, sir," one of the troopers called to him. "Consider this operation prime time."
The night was lit well enough for news cams, too. Jason knew there was no such thing as a covert operation on this scale in a heavily populated city. Ben leaned close to him. There was a loud whoomp and the tinkling rain of shattering permaglass as the 967 used frame charges on an apartment block nearby to gain entry.
"Does that mean Dad will see what's happening?"
"I believe so," said Jason.
"Oh,
the only approval you need in your life is your own, Ben. Are you ashamed of anything you've done?"
Ben paused, lips parted, eyes slightly defocused. He was thinking about something very hard.
"Only of things I haven't done."
"Such as?"
"Not telling you about someone who tried to shoot a CSF officer."
Jason could tell from Ben's voice that there was a lot more to it than that. He noted it mentally.
"We can talk about that later. Now go find a squad that needs assistance."
Ben raced off, still clutching his lightsaber, the blue blade leaving a ghost image as he moved. Across the chasm of the sky lane, Jason could see the telltale flash of light from holorecorders, as the neighbors opposite recorded the raid for posterity, and, he had no doubt, for HNE. He considered sending every holocam plummeting hundreds of meters to the ground with a multiple force grab, but then decided he had to accept scrutiny.
If you're not prepared to do something in public, don't do it at all.
And the raid was as much a statement of intent to others as it was to root out terrorists. It had to be seen to be done. Jason made a point of not shutting down his lightsaber. Even under the savage glare of the spot lamps, it was another green beacon, another symbol of Jedi involvement in something most Coruscanti hadn't seen in two generations.
"This is what Jedi do, citizens. We act on your behalf. We don't just sit around and debate in our lovely new temple that you paid for."
Ben had an earnest and brief conversation with the squad sergeant, and then stood back to wrench apart another set of doors using the Force. The light within streamed out dramatically, a hemorrhage of yellow light in a dark space between two pools of blue-white spotlight. Force breaching caused a lot less damage than a detonite charge. Ben stood back to let the troops enter. Jason activated his secure comlink channel.
"Shavu, how are we doing?"
"No fatalities so far, sir."
Bangs and crashes of something heavy being handled interrupted the captain.
"Still more than 1,500 individuals to process, but the resistant targets have been neutralized and the rest appear to be compliant."
Jason translated mentally.
"We kicked down a few doors and the rest have given up."
"Well done, Captain."
The sight of lightsabers being wielded in a roundup of Corellians would not play well to the Jedi Council, Jason suspected. It was just the beginning. For a tempting moment, he wondered how his grandfather had felt in the transition to becoming loathed. But to force-walk into time to find out would have meant first finding where that had taken place, and he didn't know. Jason also didn't know if he could face more revelations like the last one yet, but pain always had to be embraced, sooner or later. Fleet Surplus Disposal Lot, Galactic City, Coruscant.
"Captain Solo, are you sure we can't accompany you back to Corellia?"
C-3PO seemed reluctant to surrender the case of clothes to Han, as if hanging on to the handle would ensure that Han took him, too.
"Yeah, nobody would ever notice a golden droid. You'd be invisible."
Han didn't like the smell of the small shuttle he'd bought from the government disposal lot. It was alien. He hadn't realized how much of that small detail of the Falcon was embedded in his sense of comfort. He flicked through the controls on the console and despaired at the maximum velocity shown on the readout.
"Stay here. Besides, you and R2 can keep an eye on Jaina for us."
"Han,"
Leia's voice drifted from the small cargo bay.
"Honey, nobody has protocol droids like him any longer. He'd be a—"
"Han, you need to see this."
Han thought she'd found some mechanical fault he hadn't spotted when he handed over the credits. He made his way back aft to see her staring transfixed at the holoscreen in one of the coffin-sized cabins.
"Another bomb?" he asked.
It was a cramped space. He could hardly see the screen without squeezing past her and pressing his back against the aft bulkhead.
"Try bombshell."
Han took a few moments to work out what he was looking at. Riot police? No. Soldiers in black armor were storming buildings, and the caption said, "Jobby Town, Dawn Raid on Corellian Community." It was everything he expected from the Alliance. They were playing the Empire all over again, almost right down to the armor.
"Oh, you reckon this is going to shock me?"
Leia's mouth was slightly open, and her frown made her look as if she was close to tears. She held up her hand for quiet, and he saw it was shaking slightly.
"Jason," she said hoarsely.
Han scanned the screen, expecting to see Jason injured or attacked. And then he saw his son, his little boy who had always had a soft heart, and who could feel pain for others, directing soldiers into buildings to drag out Corellians. In that way of terrible and unimaginable things, it didn't look real. His mind conjured up a scenario instantly. It was a vile piece of fake propaganda. It was Traken's doing. It was a lie. But it wasn't. Leia put her hand to her mouth. Jason even had his lightsaber drawn. And he had Ben with him. Ben was taking part in the raid. Han couldn't speak.
"Honey, what's happening to him?"
Leia's voice was a whisper. "How can he do this?" She turned up the volume. The voiceover faded in, and all Han could take in were the words. "Emergency powers have been granted for the internment of Corellian citizens resident in Galactic City." Han felt guilty that he saw not fellow Corellians being herded into assault ships, but himself being betrayed by his own son.
"You should be thinking of the bigger picture. You used to be able to do that, you self-centered bum."
But as much as he tried to be altruistic, the horror and outrage that was replacing his shock was for himself and Leia.
"Not even Jaina. Now I know what she meant when she asked him if he was in trouble."
All Han could think now was that they could be on the run from their own son, and that they'd be even less welcome back in Coronet if their identities were discovered.
"3PO," Han called. "3PO, when the Falcon's ready, fly her over to us any way you can. Get back to the apartment now, and call Jaina. Tell her we'll talk to her later. We have to go. Got it?"
"I have indeed got it, Captain Solo."
Leia said nothing. She eased past Han and settled in the cockpit. When things were bad, she usually became very calm and decisive. It was a barometer of how serious a crisis they were facing.
"Ready to lift," she said quietly, checking the status readouts, as if she hadn't just watched her son turn into a monster on HNE in front of the whole galaxy. "Let's go."